Buried in the Trump administration's 2018 budget proposal is the merger of two agencies. It would take the little-known Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, cut its budget, and make it part of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Well, is this a big deal? For one view, we turn to Mickey Silberman, a principal in the affirmative action practice at the law firm Jackson Lewis. Mr. Silberman, good to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So you have one agency that is a small part of the Labor Department, and that would move into the EEOC. What is your thinking that the Trump administration's thinking is behind this?
Yeah, so first, on the Trump administration's thinking, this is about efficiency. It's about what they believe may be eliminating redundancy and reducing costs. It's consistent with the administration's broader approach of re-examining the administrative state and seeing how they might change it and really reduce it and perhaps make it more efficient.
I think it's fair to say, well, maybe not fair to say, but it seemed to me as if the Obama administration had something of a fixation on the behavior of federal contractors. I guess to some degree, that's what every administration ought to have. Tell us what the OFCCP does and how that would relate to what the Labor Department does.
Well, first, I do think it's fair to say that the Obama administration had a fixation, and there's a logic behind it at that time, the logic being you're not required to be a government contractor. You choose to do business with the federal government, and if you choose to do so, as members of the Obama administration often said, being a government contractor is a privilege, it's not a right, and with that privilege came and continues to come additional legal obligations. The theory being you're getting the benefit of taxpayers' dollars and you should hold yourself to the highest standard of legal compliance. Now, we saw that manifest in different ways under Obama with different executive orders, but even predating Obama was the executive orders and the laws that apply regarding affirmative action and equal employment opportunity. And that's what the OFCCP has for the last 35, 40 years or so enforced. And the theory, in essence, is this. You, government contractor, get the benefit of America's dollars. You need to hold yourself to the highest standard of equal employment opportunity. And in a nutshell, that means rather than what I call reactive EEO, meaning you get a complaint from someone and only start to look at your process after you get that complaint from an employee or an applicant, the foundational premise behind OFCCP regulations is that you, as a government contractor, should shift to a proactive approach to EEO. Don't wait for complaints. Instead, you should proactively examine all the phases of what I call the employee life cycle, from recruitment to applicant to hires to terminations, compensation. You should be examining that on an ongoing basis to see whether there are hidden barriers to equal employment opportunity, and the OFCCP conducts proactive compliance audits of thousands of government contractors each year to determine whether they are, in fact, proactively in compliance with their EEO requirements.
Sure. But as a practical matter, though, don't most companies of any size do that anyway, all of that self-examination, if only as an inoculation against lawsuits?
So that's a great question. And I spend my life working with employers who are trying to get EEO right. But I will say to you what I say to them. Candidly, it is these regulations under OFCCP that create both the incentive and potentially the threat if employers do not approach this as much on a proactive basis as they need to. And we have a great laboratory versus control group environment to compare this with because some employers are government contractors and some are not. I work with both of those groups. And I will tell you that government contractors, because of the OFCCP obligations, in fact, are more proactive. They tend to see fewer complaints of discrimination, and they tend to be more successful in responding to those complaints because of their more proactive posture.
Do you think it's the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs that is the cause of that, or is it simply proximity to government when there are so many federal eyes on them as a matter of daily business?
Well, I think that that's a great way to think of it. Let's look at it through that lens, because the OFCCP is really the only agency among those federal agencies, the contracting agencies, that specifically has a mandate to examine government contractors' EEO obligations. For example, despite the proximity to those federal contracts and federal eyes, as you mentioned, most federal agencies that contract with company ABC simply want the benefit of that contract. The contracting agency itself is interested in compliance with the contractual obligations. They are not separately particularly focused on issues of equal employment opportunity. They tend to leave that to specifically the OFCCP and where there are complaints, the EEOC.
We're speaking with Mickey Silberman. He's a principal in the affirmative action practice at the law firm Jackson Lewis. And so let's get to the issue at hand. Were this small agency to move over to the EEOC, which is independent agency, a fairly decent-sized one, would, in fact, the functions that were previously as part of the Labor Department still work as efficiently or more efficiently, do you think?
We engage in speculation to think about whether it will be conducted in a more efficient but still effective way. But the interesting point here, Tom, is the administration, as best as we can tell, as we mentioned at the outset of the interview, is focused on certain goals. Greater efficiency, elimination of redundancy, and cost savings. I would add one more element to that, which is they are thinking about business. They want to, the theory behind the administration's reduction of regulations is we want to get business working well with the least amount of burden from a regulatory perspective. And interestingly, you'd expect, I believe the administration expected with this proposal, that the business community would be foursquare behind this combination, this merger, because it would be an elimination of one agency that they deal with. So instead of two enforcement agencies working in similar areas, they'd have the challenge of working with one. Interestingly, big business, and for that matter, midsize and small business that I work with, has lined up squarely against this proposal. And they've done so because they believe, and in fact, I acknowledge their concerns, they believe that the combination of these two agencies could create, these are my words, a super EEO enforcement agency that ultimately results in both more in the way of enforcement burden and potentially more damages, liability that the employer would be liable for.
So rather than the EEO stance coming over to the concern that is directed only at federal contractors, they see the opposite happening, that the whole business world would be subject to what only contractors were under the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs.
I think that's a part of it, but there are one or two other pieces that are worth just unpacking here. Number one, the OFCCP and the EEOC have different remedial schemes. If an employer is found to be out of compliance, then the damages that they can demand are different. And so, for instance, OFCCP can ask for what's called make-whole relief. In the event they find that there was pay discrimination against a group of females, they can demand that whatever that dollar amount was, that's the value of the pay discrimination, that the employer provide that money. So, for example, if there are 10 females, $100,000 in pay difference that the OFCCP concludes was based on gender, they can demand that $100,000. They also, though, can threaten what we call capital punishment for government contractors, which is debarment from government contracts. EEOC, on the other hand, can also demand what we call that make-whole relief, the $100,000 in economic damages, but they also have the power to require compensatory and punitive damages. They can levy emotional distress damages, and also a significant amount as a pure penalty. So, for instance, that $100,000 in pay discrimination might be accompanied with $300,000 in punitive damages and an equivalent amount in emotional distress that those women allege that they underwent because of the pay discrimination. So if you think of stacking these different remedial options on top of each other, and then an employer undergoes some EEO investigation, they're facing the prospect of much broader and deeper potential liability coming along with those investigations.
They see this as putting baking soda together with vinegar.
Exactly right, and you know the potential for that.
Mickey Silberman is a principal in the affirmative action practice at the law firm Jackson Lewis. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Great speaking with you, Tom.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.